This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're in the area of employment law, but we're focusing on disability-related discrimination issues in the workplace. My guests are Ginny Kim, Director of the Disability Rights Program, Legal Aid Society, Employment Law Center. Her office is in San Francisco. And Rose Ellen Fairgreave of the Fairgreave Law Office, also in San Francisco. For those of you who are listening to the live program, I will be giving you our toll-free number in just a little while, and you can call in. I want to give you, so that you have this, by the way, for all of you who are listening to this program, please always remember to have a piece of paper, a pen or pencil available, because it's very important that you have this. I want to give you, for particularly those of you in California, I want to give you the statewide number for the Employment Law Center and also the website, so that you can go to it if you feel you may need some help from the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center. It's 877-350-5441, 877-350-5441. The website is www.las-elc.org. LAS stands for Legal Aid Society, dash, and ELC stands for Employment Law Center.org. All right, let me do this. Let me let you know that this segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. I want to welcome Ginny and Rose Ellen to the program.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you here. Ginny, would you do this? Because I think most of the listeners probably don't know anything about the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center. Tell us a little bit about it, will you?
Thank you, Chuck, for having me this evening. I want to give you a little background about my organization, the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center. We are a 100-year-old nonprofit public interest law firm located here in San Francisco. Our mission is to protect, preserve, and advance the workplace rights of individuals from traditionally unrepresented communities, including communities of color, women, immigrants, people with disabilities, members of the LGBT community, and the working poor. We also run workers' rights clinics, free workers' rights clinics, at locations throughout the state of California, including in San Diego, in conjunction with the University of San Diego Law School, in Orange County, in conjunction with the UC Irvine School of Law, in Fresno, in the Bay Area, in conjunction with Hastings Law School, and in conjunction with Berkeley Law, and in Sacramento, in conjunction with McGeorge, and in Davis, in conjunction with UC Davis School of Law.
So if people in those parts of the state have some problems along the lines of what we're talking about, disability problems or employment law problems, what can they expect if they contact the clinics or they contact directly your office in San Francisco?
They can contact our office and we can make them an appointment to see one of our law student counselors. Our law student counselors are supervised by attorneys that practice in the area of employment law. So they can expect to do a full intake with our law student counselors and also get legal advice and referrals at the clinics.
And this is at any one of the clinics you've mentioned throughout the state of California?
That's correct.
Oh,
Chuck.
Terrific. Rosella, let me turn to you. You represent management employers. What's the significance? And one of the things I know you want to talk about is that employers probably should contact their attorney. So talk a little bit about what they need to be concerned about.
Sure. Employers have obligations in this area. As soon as they know that an employee may need an accommodation, that triggers their responsibility to start a dialogue. It's referred to as the interactive process, but they have to engage with that employee and work with the employee to figure out what the person's limitations are and how what the employer can do to enable the employee to successfully perform the duties of that person's job, if it's possible. So if they can find a solution that is reasonable, then they have the obligation to do that.
We are dealing with two laws here, the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act, which we'll refer to during the program as ADA, and also the California Fair Employment and Housing Act. Before I turn back to Ginny for just a moment, with regard to the employers you are dealing with, or employers who the law would be focused on, We're talking both about private and public employers, are we not?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Jeannie, what is it that both the ADA and the California Fair Employment and Housing Act are requiring that employers do?
As Chuck, you mentioned, there are two laws in play when you talk about workplace rights for people with disabilities. The first is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is the federal law. And then in California, we have the Fair Employment and Housing Act. And what it means for people with disabilities is that you can't be treated differently. You can't be harassed. You can't be demoted. You can't be terminated. You can't be paid less, or you can't be treated more poorly because you have a disability. And one of the important things about both these laws is something called reasonable accommodations. And what a reasonable accommodation is something to enable an employee to perform your job, and it also applies for people who are applying for jobs. So if you need an accommodation for the interview process, then that's something that the employer should provide.
If, though, in the interview process, what occurs to me here, if an employer sees that someone has a disability and this is an interview process, is not the, and I don't mean to be the purveyor of bad news, but isn't this perhaps a very unlucky thing for the prospective employee that the employer might think, oh, I don't want to get involved with this person? Rose Ellen?
Well, the law protects those people.
Even in an initial interview?
Sure. Yes, that potential employee has the right to be viewed in the same way that people without disabilities have the right to be viewed, and the employer cannot make a hiring decision based on the fact that that person has a disability.
So one example that comes to mind that some of our clients have faced is, for example, if an employee is deaf and needs a sign language interpreter, that's an accommodation that mm-hmm. he or she can request for the interview process. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the employer can't take into consideration the fact that a sign language interpreter might be more expensive for this particular employee who is deaf. That's not something that the employer should consider in hiring or not hiring this person.
What is the basic difference between the as far as the rights of employees? And by the way, this does not apply to independent contractors. Is that correct?
That's correct.
These are people, for example, I've done recently a couple of programs on the shared economy, Uber, Lyft, et cetera. And although I think there are some changes being made, those people, at least I think still at this point, are considered independent contractors. They are not employees. And therefore, both the ADA as well as the Fair Employment and Housing Act does not apply to them. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So if, for example, you see someone who is in a supermarket, a checker, and that person you find out, you as, let's say the customer, find out that person has, because as you go into your market on a regular basis, you get to know people, and you talk with them, and maybe, and this is something that has happened with me, someone who I have found to be very nice to talk to, who is a checker at a major supermarket, has a back problem. And yet, she can stand, there's no stool there. She can stand at the cashier, at the cash register for a certain period of time, but she gets pain. Now, the employer hasn't brought in a stool. What kind of reasonable accommodation would you say she might be entitled to, Rose Ellen, with that kind of a situation because she has pain? Now, what the employer does, and this doesn't just relate to her, people exchange their positions. Someone may be out in the merchandise area stacking things or doing other things other than just being at the cash register. But what can an employee in that situation, a cashier at the cash register, expect? Can she or he, whoever it might be, expect that the employer must have a reasonable accommodation of putting a stool there?
Well, the first thing, Chuck, would be that the employee needs to let the employer know of this
need. I got this problem.
Right, yeah. That they have a problem. Because if the employer doesn't know, then that doesn't trigger the employer's obligation to take any action. So the first step, any employee who has any kind of limitation that is affecting the ability to do the job really needs to notify the employer at the earliest possibility. And so then that what happens then is that there that starts the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So what the employer will then need to know is what are the limitations? So what are the parts of your job that you can't do? And then together they need to explore, well, what will enable you to do that job?
Mm-hmm.
So the employer can't just assume that when they hear there's a back problem that a stool is going to solve the problem.
Uh-huh.
The employer has to get enough information. Sometimes it comes from the healthcare provider to know that the stool is actually what is going to solve the problem in that case.
What if a stool will not solve the problem, but the employee is entitled to some kind of an accommodation? How would that work? In other words, could the employee in the dialogue you're talking about between the supervisor or whoever it may be and the employee, does the employer or the supervisor for the employer have some responsibility to transfer this person who has a back problem to some other area so that she or he doesn't have to stand all the time?
Well, Chuck, I'll give you the classic lawyer response.
Please. Oh, no. Oh, wouldn't I know it?
It depends.
It depends. Oh, my. All right.
Basically, I mean, but what a reasonable accommodation is that it's a change that's made to the job or to the workplace, the environment, that will enable the employee or the applicant, as Ginny referred to perform the job's basic duties.
Mm-hmm.
They're referred to as the essential functions of the job. And so, but that really can change from situation to situation as far as what's going to help the employee. And also, the employer is entitled to take into account what is a reasonable accommodation. And so what that means is an employer who has only 5 employees may have lower obligations for accommodating someone than an employer who has 50 or 500 employees.
Why do you say that?
Because you can, in this analysis of what is going to be an appropriate, reasonable accommodation,
mm-hmm.
you can take into account the cost to the employer, the hardship on the employer.
Okay.
And so that's why every situation is so different, because on the employee side, the condition can be different.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a different
mm-hmm.
kind of back issue. It could be, you know, it all is going to depend on what the person's duties are.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the employer side, it's going to depend on what is reasonable within the resources that employer has.
I've been doing this program long enough that we have talked from time to time in the employment law area about at-will contracts. If, for example, an employee, someone who has a job, who has a disability, and wants to get some reasonable accommodation from the employer, is not a member of a union, does not have a written employment agreement, many people in that situation, many employees in that situation might be very concerned, well, doesn't California have the law of at-will employee, and therefore maybe if I make an effort to try to have my employer give me a reasonable accommodation, the employer will say, hey, we can't help you.
Well, the at-will, you're right, that the California law the is that employment is at-will, but the sort of limitation on that is that an employer cannot take adverse action, so can't terminate an employee for an unlawful reason. And the laws that we're talking about today, the ADA and the FEHA, make it unlawful for an employer to take any action such as termination or demotion or something else that is going to negatively impact that employee because that person has a disability or that they've requested an accommodation.
Now, my understanding is, based upon your kind of educating me before we got here, is that the FEHA, the California Fair Employment and Housing Act, applies to, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, applies to employers of, 5 or more employees?
That's correct.
And the ADA applies to employers with 20 or more.
15 or more employees.
I'm sorry, 15 or more employees.
That's correct, Chuck.
Okay. What if, for example, someone has a physical disability, such as the back problem that I've talked about here, and is taking some kind of a painkiller medication, which is helping, at least temporarily, but then it's not helping anymore, or is taking the pain medication, and by having some accommodation between the medication and the accommodation is doing better. Can the employer take the position, Roselle, and then, well, hey, you've got medication here, which is helping with your pain. I don't need to reasonably accommodate you. You can stand at the cash register. What comments would you have about that, generally speaking?
Well, an employee.
I know it depends. I know.
No. The employee's disability is considered without regard to any medication or any other device that might be used to sort of mitigate the efforts of the condition. So, people who have conditions that are stabilized still are protected. And still can be considered to have a disability if it's something that would limit mm-hmm. the activity. And Ginny may have.
Ginny, do you have any comments on that? Further comments? No? Okay.
No.
Let me ask you this, if you would, very briefly. What are the examples of reasonable accommodations? I think this will help those of you listening to the program to know what they may be. If you both wouldn't mind just very quickly kind of ticking off what are the examples of reasonable accommodations?
So the common accommodation request or accommodation that people, our clients will call about is a leave of absence. So this would be for an employee who needs time off for medical treatments or for procedures such as surgery or to recover from illness related to a disability. Another example of a reasonable accommodation might be a part-time schedule for an employee who has fatigue or who is unable to stand for more than 4 hours per day because mm-hmm. of a disability.
And then employers may also need to make modifications to furniture or mm-hmm. the work environment. So, for example, a person with a back issue may need to not sit, but would be much better off standing. Mm-hmm. You know, and so maybe in that case, the employer might provide one of those, you know, sit-stand desks where they can alternate back and forth between sitting and standing.
I know in my office, one of the secretaries had a back problem. And going back a couple of years ago, the computer was set up on her desk and she sat at it. And this was something that was bothering her. And then the office went ahead and set up a movable kind of desk where she could move the computer up and she could actually stand while working at the computer. So now, at times, she'll be standing working at the computer. I always congratulate her on being at attention when I see her. And she appreciates that, of course, you know. Or at times, she's sitting on her chair looking at the computer. What if there is of other employees who perhaps are not particularly nice with someone who has a disability? Is there any kind of reasonable accommodation? I notice in the list of things that you talk about that you provided to me, Ginny, you have education of other employees. What does that mean?
So, if an employee with a disability such as HIV who is facing misunderstanding on the job, he or she might seek education of their coworkers and other supervisors to raise awareness and dispel fears and stereotypes mm-hmm. of their coworkers.
And what about if there is how do you deal with a let's say a small business and you may have had this Roselle, since you do represent employers and management, let's say we have a mom and pop shop. And very, very few employees. How should a mom and pop shop deal when I say mom and pop, maybe it's a husband and wife who have a small grocery, little place, or heaven knows what they may have. But how should they deal with something like this if one of their employees, maybe they only have 5 or 6 employees, how should they deal with something like that?
Well, I think the most important thing first is to understand what the limitation is. And once you have that understanding, you can start to talk about potential solutions that might help the employee. And, you know, a lot of times an employer will just sort of react, you know, kind of the gut reaction will be, oh my gosh, how much is this going to cost me? But really, with a little bit of creative thinking and some dialogue back and forth between the employer and the employee, and kind of troubleshooting. I mean, there's not one solution that applies in every case. And so it really requires understanding what the limitations are and creative thinking. Sometimes out-of-the-box solutions might work, and they might not cost much, mm-hmm. but they might not be the first thing you think about.
And it seems to me, with what you're telling me, because I am not an employment law attorney, but it seems to me that what this requires, both from the employer's standpoint, whoever the employee is dealing with, the supervisor or whatever, and the employee, that really good cooperation in terms of resolving this, so that there's no lawsuit that ends up trying to resolve this, which is not going to help anybody, frankly, in my opinion. Would you agree, Rosellen?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Yes. I mean, the best scenarios are where really both parties come to the table and have an open dialogue and are really both with the ultimate goal of allowing this person to continue working and continue doing the job they're doing.
I want to mention, in that we're still in the statewide version of the program, which is the first half hour of the program, again, the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center, I want to give you those numbers in case, wherever you may be in the state of California, if you either call this number or go to the website, you can get, if you do have a problem as an employee, you can go ahead and call them and see what they might be able to do in giving you some direction. The 877 is toll-free, is it not, or is it?
It's toll-free.
Yeah, here's the Employment Law Center toll-free number, 877-350-5441. And the website for the Legal Aid Society-Employment Law Center is www.las-elc.org. One of the things, pardon me, go ahead, Jim.
Can I just add one thing?
Yeah, please, if you would.
So a lot of accommodation requests can be very low cost. So an example that you gave earlier of a standing desk, that could be a really low cost accommodation to grant to an employee with a disability, especially in light of retaining valuable employees. So another example of a low cost accommodation might be a computer with voice recognition software, or
a computer with what, please?
Voice recognition software.
Ah.
Or enlarged type for an employee.
Why would you need a voice recognition software?
If you have an employee with low vision.
Gotcha.
Right.
So if you have that, and I have never dealt with something like that, the employee can talk to the computer, and the computer can translate that onto the into writing.
So, or
wonderful.
An employee with carpal tunnel syndrome who can't type will use voice recognition software as well.
That's terrific, terrific. One of the things that I'd like to, if they can't get help from either the Legal Aid Society, Employment Law Center, or they find that the employer is just not being cooperative at all, my understanding is that an employee can file an administrative charge with either the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or the State Department of Fair Employment and Housing. And I want to give you those phone numbers and then ask you both a little bit about that. The Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, that number is 800-669-6820, 669-6820, or the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing, we refer to it as FEHA, at 800-844-1684, 800-884-1684. Ginny, and we have a couple minutes left in the statewide version of the program, and Rosalyn, what essentially will happen if someone files an administrative charge with either or both of those two entities?
So both the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing are the federal and state agencies that are charged with investigating charges of discrimination. So once an employee files a charge with these agencies, the investigators will look at the charge and investigate the charge and see whether or not they believe discrimination has occurred.
I see. And what will happen if this discrimination has occurred? What will they then do, if anything?
So they could either file a lawsuit on behalf of the person, or they could make a finding that they believe that discrimination has occurred, in which the employee can file their own lawsuit with finding.
But either of these agencies cannot force the employer to do anything there. Is that correct?
There is a separate mediation process that agencies have.
Yes.
The parties can go to mediation.
And if that doesn't work, then the employee has the right under the law to file his or her own action.
Correct.
Court action.
That's correct. And one important thing about both these agencies is if an employee wants to file a lawsuit, they do have to go through this administrative process
first.
That's
good, very good to know. Rosalyn, what comments do you have? About both of these agencies.
Well, the agencies will contact the employer, and so if an employer receives a notification that a charge has been filed, the employer should pay very close attention to that and respond promptly.
And not blow them off. Is that the idea?
That's right.
Not blow them off. All right. For those of you listening to the program live, we will continue for another half hour, and I hope that you will stay with us. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program in the employment law area. We're focusing on disability-related discrimination issues in the workplace. My guests are Rosalyn Fairgreave of the Fairgreave Law Office in San Francisco and Ginny Kim, Director of the Disability Rights Program, Legal Aid Society, Employment Law Center. Her office is in San Francisco. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to call in with your question about disability, your question about reasonable accommodation, whether you are an employee or an employer, I do welcome you to call in. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you're listening to the program live on the internet at www.kalw.org, I welcome your calls also, wherever you may be. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area, Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. And if you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you are in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find an experienced attorney to talk with you. And for a half an hour consultation, with minor exception, you will pay between $25 to $35. That money does not go to the lawyer. It goes to the lawyer referral service to make that service continue to exist and help you. So that's available to you. I can see that at this point, people are not responding yet. Let me give you our toll-free number again. I would like you to join us if you would. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Again, whether you're an employee or an employer. And for those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area, the San Mateo County Law Library is presenting a free noontime lecture on how to clean your criminal record. And that'll be on Thursday, October 20th at noon. And you are invited wherever you may be in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. A certified specialist in criminal law, attorney Christopher Morales, will discuss various ways to clean up a criminal record, including even how to obtain a certificate of rehabilitation and the steps necessary to apply for a pardon from the governor or even the president. And you're invited to attend the free lecture at the Law Library at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, again on Thursday, October 20th at noon. If you'd like some more information, that's 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. One other thing for all of you, and that is our next Call a Lawyer Night, which we do usually on the last Wednesday of the month, and that will be this month on October 26th at 7 p.m. California time. This is when you can call in and talk with attorneys off the air while I'm doing the live program, and we call this Call a Lawyer. If you're not familiar with it, we do it every month, usually the fourth Wednesday, and you might want to jot down that number. No obligation on your part whatsoever. It's a public service these attorneys perform. That's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And before we take any calls, and I hope we have people who would like to really respond and take advantage of the fact that you are here, what if the employer takes a position that, after some discussion with the employee, we offered the employee this. The employee said, oh, that doesn't work. And the employer said, well, hey, I offered that to you, and that's it. Rose Ellen, what further obligation or responsibility does the employer have? Would the employee say, no, that won't do it?
Well, there are responsibilities on both sides. So if they have spoken and come up with a possible solution, the employee should give it a try and should see if it works. And maybe the case where it works for a little while and then it doesn't work anymore and the employee comes back to the employer, says it's not working, well, then the employer has kind of an ongoing obligation. So they should engage again in the process. But at the same time, if the employee just refuses to engage in the process or doesn't want to try the proposed solution that is a reasonable one that has been arrived at after the employee has gotten the relevant information, then the employer has done what it is obligated to do, and if the employee doesn't want to try, then the employer has met its obligation at that point.
I see. Okay. For those of you who are listening to the program live, and we are live on the internet at www.klw.org. We're doing this live on Wednesday evening, October 5th. So if you get this program delayed wherever you may be, because the program is uplinked to the NPR satellite for probably airing at another time, please understand this is a live program on Wednesday evening, October 5th. And although I've given the number, the toll-free number, you're not going to find anybody here who actually will be able to answer your question. So those of you, though, who are listening to the live program, let me give you the toll-free number again, 866-798-8255. What are you, Ginny, what are you finding that is the more frequent concern of employees who are contacting your office? What are they complaining about that you find is more often than not?
So we get a lot of calls to our office from people who are concerned about disclosing what they term as invisible disabilities. So they have disabilities that may not be obvious to their employer. So some of these might be mental disabilities or disabilities like epilepsy, other types of disabilities like HIV that they don't want to disclose. And so the questions that often come up are, should I disclose my disability? When should I disclose my disability? And what do I say to my employer in order to get reasonable accommodation? And so disclosure of a disability is a very personal decision. Some people with disabilities may feel very comfortable disclosing. Others may not. And also, it's very individualized. So some workplaces might be more receptive to having, disclosure. And again, you know, some employees may be more receptive to disclosing that. So we counsel our callers, our clients, as to what it is they can or cannot say, or what, you know, they don't have to disclose their exact disability. They do have to let the employer know that they do have some kind of condition that affects their ability to do certain functions of their job. But they don't have to disclose, you know, that they have depression, or that they are HIV positive, or that they have PTSD.
What if an employer, the supervisor of an employer, observes something that indicates to that supervisor that there is something, there is some disability here that this person has, this supervisor is trying to be a good man or a good woman in dealing with this employee, but the employee won't say anything. How should that supervisor deal with this employee, and how should this employee deal with the supervisor, where obviously there is something going on?
That's a really good question, Chuck, and it's one that I get pretty frequently. An employer in that situation has to walk a fine line between respecting an employee's right to privacy, but also fulfilling its obligation to accommodate an employee who needs an accommodation. And so in that case, an employer can remind the employee of the right to an accommodation, mm-hmm. remind the employee how the employee can go about requesting an accommodation. Some employers are formal and have forms, maybe provide a copy mm-hmm. of the form that the employee can use to request the accommodation.
But you don't have to put your request in writing, do you?
You don't have to put your request in writing, no.
It's probably a good idea, I would assume, to do that.
Well, it's helpful, I think, on both sides to really document the process. Document the request, and also for the employer to document that they have reminded the employee how they can request an accommodation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it is up to the employee to request the accommodation. And if they choose not to,
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Any comments on that?
I would add, Chuck, that on our website, we have some sample accommodation requests. So if an employee doesn't know at all how to start the process, they can go to our website. We will have a sample and have fill in the blank. So this is my accommodation that I'm looking for, and this just fill it in, and they can submit that to the employer.
And that's very interesting. All right. Let me give you the website again in case you'd like that, www.las-elc.org, and that stands for Legal Aid Society - Employment Law Center. All right, we're going to talk with Laura. Laura, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My situation is that it's more of a statement and how to deal with it, but I think you already, just in the last couple of minutes, I think you sort of answered the question for me. I don't talk about being disabled.
Uh-huh.
Because I know that I will not get hired, and or I could get fired.
So you are Laura. You are employed right now. Is that right?
No, I'm not. No,
oh, you're
I
not.
Was,
okay. You're looking for work, but you are very concerned that if you are upfront with this, you either will not get hired, or if you are hired, you may get fired. Is that right?
Yeah. Because employers will, you know, if they're afraid of something legal happening, they will use the smallest incident to, you know, let you go.
Now, you're in San Francisco, Laura. Have you made any effort to contact the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center and see if they might be able to help you in dealing with this?
The last job I had, I did not, during the hiring process, as I was going over the paperwork with my supervisor,
yeah.
I did not talk about my disability.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm saying is, you are unemployed right now. I am wondering, have you made any attempt, since obviously you are concerned about about how you should or shouldn't reveal what your disability may be. I'm wondering if you've made any attempt to get any advice by
No, I've been disabled for a long time.
No, okay, I understand that, but I'm wondering if you are looking for any kind of legal advice, and if so, have you made any attempt to call the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, I thank you for calling, and I thank you for letting us know. I'll tell you, I have been a consumer protection deputy DA for San Mateo County for 32 years. I've been a lawyer a lot longer than that. And frankly, I feel when you have something such as a nonprofit organization, such as the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center, not only in San Francisco, but in conjunction with law schools throughout the state, it makes a lot of sense for you to take advantage of something where you are not going to have to pay them. Your services, Jenny, are free, are they not?
That's correct. Sure.
I mean, this is a nonprofit organization, and Laura, with what you are telling me and your concern, my feeling is whatever you can do to educate yourself more about what may be available to you in dealing with your disability and in dealing with a prospective employer, to me, you've got nothing to lose but maybe something to gain, and that's why I brought that up. All right, Joan, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Hi, Joan.
Hello.
Is this Joan?
Yes, this is.
Hi, Joan.
Hi. So I was wondering about what kind of reasonable accommodations can be made for a person that has dyslexia or needs more time processing. Do you have to put it in writing, or what has been the, I'm wondering how companies respond to this.
Your telephone has a crackling experience. Briefly define what you consider to be dyslexia, so we all know what you're concerned with.
It would be graphomotor dyslexia, just reversal of letters.
Okay.
And not being able to write, and
good.
Even
all right. Let me see.
Computer,
let me see.
But it's very slow.
Let me ask you to turn your radio back up, and let me see if I can get some thoughts for you. Thank you very much, Joan, for calling. I appreciate your wanting to do that and joining us. Who wants to respond? Jenny, do you want to respond first? With someone who has dyslexia, obviously transferring from one letter in one place to another, it's a great reading difficulty. What thoughts are there in terms of reasonable accommodation for something like that?
So one possible reasonable accommodation would be extra time. So if you need extra time to transfer thoughts, that's one accommodation. I would suggest that there is a service called the Job Accommodation Network that we refer a lot of our clients to. It's run by the Department of Labor. It's also a free service, and you can Google it, but it's called the Job Accommodation Network. And what they do is they work with employees with different kinds of disabilities. And on their website, they have a breakdown of disabilities and common accommodation requests that employees with that type of disability would request. So again, you know, this process of reasonable accommodations is very individualized. So if you have dyslexia, you might need something different than someone else who has dyslexia. So I would suggest that you go to that website or call them to talk about what exact limitations you might have and what kind of accommodations might benefit you in the workplace.
When you say the Department of Labor, is this the federal department?
Correct.
This
the
is the federal,
federal
department.
Department of Labor.
If Joan were to call your office at 877-350-5441, would she be able to get the phone number for the Department of Labor?
Yes.
And the Job Accommodation Network?
Yes.
So that I hope, Joan, that you got that, and we'll follow through. Go ahead, Jenny.
And to answer your second question about whether or not it needs to be in writing, so you don't have to put your accommodation request in writing, but it is preferable. Like if you put in an email or if you submit a letter and keep a copy, at least you have a paper trail of what you've requested of your employer.
So there you are, Joan. All right. Go ahead, Rosella.
Chuck, please. I just wanted to reiterate that resource. I think their website is www.askjan.org. But it's a very, very good resource also for employers to come up with ideas. You know, sometimes, and I'll refer to it if I, you know, get, if there's a new condition that I haven't dealt with before, just to really spark the ideas flowing as far as what possible solutions can be for particular conditions. It's very comprehensive. It has just about every disability you can imagine.
Really?
In there.
Wow.
Yes, and they've got just information. I mean, it's just a great informative resource, and I would highly recommend that to employers as well.
Would you repeat slowly again what you think is the website for that?
Yes, I believe it's askjan.org.
So, A-S-K.
Mm-hmm, J-A-N, that's for Job Accommodation Network.
Oh, I see, .org, okay. I thought there might have been someone named Jan.
Right.
Where's Jan? Okay, askjan.org. All right, let's take Hemko. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening, sir.
Hi,
hi. Hi. I'm just having a problem with my disability. I have diabetes that it doesn't require any accommodation, but requires to take my insulin time. I asked them my own time to take my break for insulin, but they denied me my insulin. So I miss a lot of my insulin because I have to take it once a day at the same time. What should I do?
Are you working for a large employer, Hemko?
No, I'm working for
a small
security firm.
I'm sorry, you're working for what?
Security firm.
Ah, you are. Are you a security officer?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you are. And they will not let you take... how often should you take your insulin?
Well, every once a day, because in the morning time I can't make it. I will sleep late, mm-hmm. and then I will the hour. So 6 o'clock I prefer because of I put my alarm in the telephone to take it at the same time. But when I ask them, they denied me. If I am taking it, they call me to do something. So I told them somebody have to come to give me break, and then they are not allowed to do that.
All right. Do you want to ready to respond? All right. Turn your radio up, back up, Hemko, and let me start with Jenny Kim here, please.
So, Hemko, that sounds like a very easy accommodation request that the employer should be able to fill. It's no cost to the employer for you to be able to take a quick break to take your insulin. I don't exactly know why your employer is denying you that right. I'm happy to talk to you further about this, but I would request that accommodation in writing and see what your employer's response is. But again, from my point of view, that's an easy accommodation request for the employer.
Hemko, I hope you have something to write with because I'm going to give the phone number again for the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center. And my guest, Jenny Kim, that's J-I-N-N-Y-K-I-M. She said she'd be happy to talk with you. I hope you have something to write with. Here's the number for her office, 877-350-5441. I think it would be well worth it for you to give Jenny a call. You're there. I'll repeat the number, 877-350-5441. I hope you got that, Hemko. By the way, everyone, one of the things that I wish you would do as we do this program where we're trying to educate people and give you some direction of where you may go for help, please, if you're going to listen to this program, which I hope you do, of course, always have something to write with. If you feel that you might be able to, if you're listening to this program, obviously you feel there's something about the law that you're interested in and that may be helpful to you if you learn something from the program. Always have a piece of paper, a pen or pencil, so that you can write something down. Otherwise, you're wasting your time and I'm trying to do something that isn't really that effective for you. So please, if you would, for the future, always have something to write with, and maybe that will help you in the long run, I sure hope. Tom, welcome to the program. Tom, are you there? Hi, Tom.
Hi, this is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
So I'm calling, actually, I have a very specific question. I have a vision disability, actually, and I'm going to get in my car here, so there's a little less noise, but I'm certainly not going to be driving. My question is as follows. I have an eye issue that's degenerative disease, and what I've been finding is my work has been harder and harder to do. I work in an office for a large software company, and it's harder and harder for me to see my monitor, harder and harder for me to get things done on time, without mistakes, that type of thing. And over the years, I've progressively gotten larger monitors as they've kind of just come more common in the office. But at this point, actually, I am no longer able to pass the eye exam to get my driver's license, according to my doctor. And I'm kind of wondering what that, and I'm not totally blind, let's say, but eventually I will be blind. And I kind of don't know where the point in that degradation is that I need to raise this with my employer, or even how disability would work in that situation if there's an accommodation that can be made. I mean, it's pretty hard to do software development if you can't see.
Yeah. You're obviously in some aspect of the Silicon Valley, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And how long have you worked for this company?
About 8 years.
Wow. Okay. You are not a union member, I presume.
No.
And you do not? Do you have a written contract, a written employment contract with this company?
I don't. I'm not sure what that would mean. We're employed at will, I think.
Oh, you are. But you are an employee. You are not an independent contractor. Is that correct?
No, I'm not.
So you are an employee.
I'm a full-time employee. Yes.
Okay. If you turn your radio back up, let me get some comments from my guests. And Tom, thank you very much for calling, because this is obviously something that are you still there, Tom?
I am, yes.
How old are you, by the way?
I'm 33.
33. Here we are. I mean, this is very, potentially very, very serious. Tom, thank you very much for your question. Let me see if I can't get at least some answers that give you some direction. Thank you very much for calling. Turn your radio back up. Do you have any comments, either of you, for Tom? Here's this young man. He's worked for this company, high-tech company, apparently. He's been there for 8 years. He has a degenerative disease in his eyes. He told us he's not going to be able to pass the driving test because his sight is getting worse all the time. What kind of accommodation might he think that he might be able to get? Do you have any thoughts, Jenny, for him?
So one thing that popped out when you were talking, Tom, is that so it's important to talk to your employer about your need for accommodation as soon as you realize you might need one.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, you know, there might be some software or some kind of device that could help you so that you can look at the screen and you don't have to see the screen. So, I mean, I would maybe contact the Job Accommodation Network and see what kind of equipment or devices they might suggest that might enable you to continue to do your job. The other thing that is often called the accommodation of last resort is that you could also ask your employer to transfer you to a position that's vacant. So is there a job that doesn't require you to do computer work or software work that you can do even if, as your vision deteriorates? So that's something to also consider.
So there are two things here, Tom. One is Ginny just suggested that you get in touch with a Job Accommodation Network, which is www.askjan.org. My thought would be, if it were me, I would want to call, if you don't mind my saying this, call Ginny, Tom, and have a chance to talk with her on the phone. If you have something to write with, that phone number is 877-350-5441 for the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center. I think it's always helpful if you have some contact to begin with, such as this radio program and a guest on my program. If my guest or guests are willing to talk with you, take it. Take it and run. we all have to educate ourselves. Every day I find to some degree is a learning experience. So I hope you try that, Tom, and maybe Jenny can give you some thoughts on this. At this point, we have maybe 2 minutes left of the program. If you have a question which is succinct and you would like to call in, it's the toll-free number 866-798-8255. But if you do have a question, call immediately. Otherwise, we're gone. Did you have any further comments with respect to Tom, Rosellen?
Oh, no. I agree with Ginny's comments on that. You know, that what I picked up from what he said was that he hadn't yet raised the issue with his employer, yeah, and that he was having some issues with his work product. And so that's a case where you don't want your employer to be the first one to come to you and say, oh, you've got all these, your performance is dropping.
Yeah.
You kind of want to be proactive, I think.
Yes.
And he did mention that the that it's a larger employer. And so that, yeah, bodes well for finding, and, you know, finding, as Jenny mentioned, possibly another position, or it definitely helps when it's a larger employer, because there may be more opportunities there.
Obviously, Tom, with what you've told us, you're worried about telling your employer about this. But as Rosellen and Jenny are telling you, it's terribly important that you take the initiative here. And again, I suggest that you might want to call Jenny Kim and talk with Jenny on the phone during normal business hours and get some specific information from her and then go from there. It can be very helpful to you. And obviously, with your work history and your young age, you need to take as much help as you can get. And I think with what Rosellen said, it probably would be to your great benefit to bring this up to your employer as soon as possible. And if it is a large employer and there's a vacancy which doesn't require that you're going to have to be working with a computer, this would be just an outstanding thing for you to be able to actually fall into. So please take the initiative and give Jenny a call tomorrow and see if she can't help you. We are coming to about the last half minute of the program, and any final thoughts, Jenny, in just a few seconds, if you would.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show, Chuck. I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm happy to talk to employees who want advice about their rights in the workplace. We hear from people throughout the state about questions that they have about disclosure, about what kinds of accommodations to request, what happens when they think discrimination has occurred. So please feel free to give us a call.
Thank you very much. I want to thank you both very much for joining me on the program. Great to have you here. Jenny Kim, Director of the Disability Rights Program, Legal Aid Society, Employment Law Center in San Francisco, and Rosellen Fairgrieve of the Fairgrieve Law Office. That Fairgrieve is spelled Fairgrieve, for those of you who might have wondered. Her office is also in San Francisco. Thank you both very much for joining us. Next week on Your Legal Rights, or next time, I should say, on Your Legal Rights, we'll have a debate of California's ballot Proposition 57, the Public Safety and Rehabilitation Act of 2016. My guest will be Stephen Wagstaff, President of the California District Attorneys Association, Jeffrey Hayden, Chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization and a specialist in criminal law, and California Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman, retired. All of these people I'm very close to, by the way. Wagstaff is my former boss, and Jeff Hayden is a very good friend, and so is the judge. Your Legal Rights production staff members are Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Public Radio Satellite Transmission, or I should say the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the Public Radio Satellite Transmission of the program. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.